and I'm excited to be here with you. I think it's been almost 25 years. I was a teenager, I think, the last time I was here, a late teenager. So it's an honor to be with you. And I'm going to talk about freedom today. That's pretty much what I always talk about, as a woman who needs freedom and a woman who journeys with other women towards freedom. Back in 2004, I met a girl named Pinky. She was 16 and standing in the line in a red light area in Calcutta selling her body. She found herself trapped by circumstance. Her mother had died, her father was sick, and she had two little brothers to support. I asked, where can she go? How can there be no options for this little girl? I held up my fist toward God in that moment, and I began a process. I'm actually always in process, always a woman on a journey, always in the middle of a struggle. Many of the things in my heart today began in the red light areas of Calcutta, India. They began at Saribari, where we, as a community of women and men seeking freedom, began to seek a safe place for restoration for the vulnerable who lived in the forbidden areas of Calcutta. Saribari, as Jennifer already unpacked a little bit, provides freedom and opportunity through employment to women who are vulnerable to being trafficked and to women trapped in commercial sexual exploitation. We began with 3 women and now employ almost 130 for freedom. I've spent the last 13 years on a journey with the women of Saribari as we work together for freedom. I began to see something in their lives, a process, a struggle, that I could not fully understand or even identify with at first. It was a fluke, or maybe a little bit of divine intervention, that I started reading the book of Exodus, and slowly I began to see things more clearly. I began to better understand the women I work with, and I began to better understand myself and my own struggles in its pages. We humans often find ourselves enslaved. Maybe it's not sexual slavery, but in one type of bondage or another. I observed that whenever a woman chooses to come out of sexual slavery, out of the sex trade, where she's been since her youngest and most vulnerable years, she begins a process of exodus, one very similar to that of the Israelites. I began to see the parallels in my own journey as I walked alongside the women of Saribari and I read about the Israelites in Exodus. When we begin our freedom journeys, we're all looking for the promised land, but that's not often where we find ourselves. This morning, I want to share a little bit about what I've learned about slavery, a lot of what I've learned about Exodus, and a taste of what I've learned about freedom. I ask that you bear with me, because I'm not a theologian. There will be no 3-point sermon. As I said, I'm a woman in process with you, and my friends and sisters in Calcutta, India. So let me just say a prayer for us. God, we thank you that you are a God, the God who gives freedom. You are a God of justice. You are a God who gives hope to the hopeless and freedom to the enslaved. We thank you that you go before us into the places, into the dark places in the world, and you hold us close. Thank you that you are with us today, right now, in this moment. I pray you'd be in these next few minutes as I share more about Saribari. Pray these things in your name. Amen. So as you all probably know, enslavement is not what we were created for. We were created for freedom. We were created for the garden. We were created for intimacy with the Maker. So it's not surprising that we desire what we were created for, and that our freedom is intimately tied to the freedom of others. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King said, I cannot be free until all men are free. Women, men and women are free. He said men, but we're going to say men and women are free. And if that's true, then I stand before you here today as a woman still in chains. We are all inexorably linked in the same chains that hold men, women, and children in the sex trade, the chains that have held the caravan of men, women, and children seeking freedom from Central and South America approaching our borders currently, the chains that still hang from black and brown brothers and sisters in our own country. Let us not deceive ourselves that we are free. In Calcutta, as many of you know, there are thousands of women in bondage. And for every woman, there is represented innumerable men and children who also live with them and also remain in slavery to the sex trade. Many women are often bound, literally by another person who is their owner, and even if there's not a person standing behind them, forcing them to wait for their next customer, women in the commercial sex trade in India are literally bound by the constraints of culture, poverty, and fear. They have no way out, no one to undo their chains and show them the way to go, no one who is coming to rescue them after the age of 18. No one is there to walk with them in the Exodus and finally into the promised land that is their freedom. Today, I am primarily going to be talking about women who've been trafficked, but I do want to make a short statement about the men. Every day we see men in Calcutta who are also enslaved. They are wounded, defeated, and broken. It is unfortunate that we can only see their brokenness in the context of how it hurts women and girls in places like Sonogachi. I struggle to see them as anything besides oppressors. In Calcutta, as we've endeavored to pray for the men, we've had new eyes to see them. They are lost in self-loathing, pride, sexual addiction, control, and false power with no path to freedom. And as we've prayed for these men, we see and know that the women in Calcutta, and truly the women of the world, will never have complete freedom without the redemption and transformation of men. Like I said, our freedom is inexorably linked. Men are key, because if they're not part of the process we seek to walk through with the women of Saribari, then the women will very likely not make it. I'm speaking specifically of the husbands, sons, and lovers who play primary long-term roles in the lives of the women of Saribari. The freedom of women is inexorably tied to the freedom of men. That's enough about the men for now, but I don't want to leave them out of the picture that I'm going to paint today. On a side note, if any of you are interested in being part of the Exodus for Men in Calcutta, we would welcome you to our team. So here's what it means to be in slavery in Calcutta. I'm going to unpack some statistics here. So you can listen to the next part as quotes. But I'm not going to unpack where it all came from. I can tell you afterwards if you really want to know. The most recent statistics by the Indian government suggest that there are 60,000 brothel-based women in the sex trade in Calcutta, with about 10,000 in the main red light area we work in called Sonogachi. Of those 10,000, 7,000 of them live and work in the red light area with their families. And 3,000 are what we call flyers. They come in from the villages, often up to 3 hours away, to work in Sonogachi to support their families who live in desperate poverty, and where often the male breadwinner is no longer a part of the picture. About 35% of the women in Sonogachi are 17 years old or younger. The majority of sex workers who come to Calcutta via trafficking are not kidnapped, but they are lured, coaxed, and cajoled with false promises and an offer of help out of a dead-end situation or crisis. Force is used later after the women and girls have already been sold. India is mainly a receiving country, a reception center for women from Bangladesh and Nepal. It also acts as a transit country, and being so large, it has its own internal transit, sending, and receiving areas. Calcutta is an important receiver. It functions as a transit place from where Indian, Nepalese, and Bangladeshi women come to the city, either independently or through agents, and are taken to red light areas in other cities, such as Bombay, or even to other countries in the Middle East. It's estimated that roughly 100,000 to 160,000 Nepalese girls and women are working as sex workers in India. Roughly 20% of them are estimated to be underage. Some estimates say as many as 100,000 Nepalese girls are being trafficked every year into India. Cases have been reported of women and girls from West Bengal, which is a state where Calcutta is, are being sold to both national and international markets. It's reported that there's a network where young Bengali girls are sold off as brides to the Gulf, a 9-year-old being sold to a 40-year-old man, a 15-year-old girl being sold to a 60-year-old man. Some girls are sold directly into prostitution, but in terms of sheer numbers, the most common path to sexual slavery is walked by girls who are searching for an escape from poverty. I met Rina in 2002. She was one of the very first girls I spoke to in Sonogachi. She was young, somewhere in her mid-teens at that time. She was still open, still willing to have a conversation and a cup of tea, still interested in the possibility of her freedom. Today, 16 years later, in her 30s, she's hard and closed, and she won't look me in the eye anymore. The livelihood of her entire extended family in the village depends on her work in the red light area. She does not see any way out. She feels she can't come to work for a freedom business because how she feels it would financially impact her family. She's literally trapped. The statistics I've read are rough, and the personal stories are rougher. We can be thankful that we do serve a God who hears the cries of those who suffer. And we, as the people of God, are merely tracing the fingerprints and footsteps of God who's already been there. The people of Israel cried out for deliverance, and God heard them. In Exodus 3:7, it says, "The Lord said, 'I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I've come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and bring them out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey.' And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go," he's speaking to Moses. "I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." God hears and takes actions through his people, through Moses, to bring the people of the promised land, to the promised land, to freedom. And then comes the hard part. Then comes the resistance. Resistance from those who have enslaved. We know that Pharaoh did not want to let the Israelites go. He battled on every front to keep them in slavery, much like traffickers and brothel owners. Until he was finally defeated, sort of. He still changed his mind one last time and went after the Israelites before God stopped him at the Red Sea. And then there was the resistance from those coming out of slavery. The Israelites are joyous and excited when Pharaoh finally gives them the command to go, and they're filled with joy. I think they literally probably were dancing their way out of Egypt. They were not only grateful to God, but loving all over Moses. Moments into their freedom journey, the Israelites' attitude changes when they perceive that their freedom is going to be lost, and the one who guides them cannot be trusted. In Exodus 13, it says, "When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them on the road through the Philistine country, though it was shorter. For God said, 'If they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt.' So God led the people around by the desert road toward the Red Sea, and the Israelites went up out of Egypt ready for a battle. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, 'Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us here to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than die in the desert.' Moses answered the people, 'Do not be afraid. Stand firm, and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You only need to be still.' We so easily forget and so often want to return to that place of enslavement rather than face the battle it takes to engage in transformation. It's easy to forget that God will fight for us, that God will fight for me, God will fight for you. But if we can take those first steps, if we can trust that God is for us and will fight for us, we can begin the process of Exodus. As I've lived life with the women of Sarabari, I have become aware of this very human idea that God will take us straight out of slavery into the promised land. But it seems more often than not that God wants to take us through a process of Exodus, and he has a plan for it from the beginning. Exodus 7:16 says, "Then say to him, 'The Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has sent me to say to you, let my people go so they may worship me in the desert. But until now you have not listened.'" I think it's a little weird, right, that God did not say, "You can worship me in the promised land, the land I'm going to give you." He said, "Can come and worship me in the desert." Nobody wants to go to the desert. Author John Bevere says, "Why would Moses take them to the promised land before introducing them to the promiser, the desire of the ages? If he had first brought them to the promised land, they would have ended up loving the promises more than the promiser. God's main purpose in delivering Israel was so that they could know and love him." We must recognize that from Adam and Eve till now that God has been interested in the transformation of people. God is not just interested in the destination, because the destination in his own mind is secure. He is interested in the process of transformation, which is why after more than 400 years of slavery, God does not take his people straight to the promised land. He takes them to the desert. God is not just interested in giving us what we want or what we think we deserve. God wants to be a part of a process that takes us there so that we can receive freedom as a gift that he can give, so we can fall in love with him and not just the things he can or wants to do for us. He is interested in knowing and being known by us. Exodus requires struggle and a willingness to be transformed. That's what Sarabar is about, the restoration of women from the sex trade. Sarabar is about transformation, redemption, and exodus. The road to freedom is never easy. For women coming out of the trade, it means a completely different lifestyle. It means getting up early, making your food. Making food in India is not easy. You're squatting down with a gas stove, cooking your food on the floor with one burner for the whole day, for the whole family. It means a 40-hour work week. It means structure and accountability. It means budgeting and planning ahead. It means learning something new when all your life you've been told that you are nothing and worthless and you cannot do anything but lay down and take it. On the flip side to this freedom that we have on offer to the women is a new life, new confidence, restoration, hope, and dignity. It's the hope of a new life, the hope of a life made new. I want to draw some parallels for you between the people of Exodus and the women I have the privilege to work with in Calcutta. God brought an oppressed, complaining, doubtful, ungrateful, and disobedient people out of slavery in Egypt. God, through us and many organizations like us, is helping an oppressed, complaining, doubtful, sometimes ungrateful group of women out of the sex trade in Calcutta. The women of Sarabari have been given everything they need: good wages, health care, retirement, life skills, education, a loving and safe environment, the blessing of the God of the universe, and still they struggle. I think we can all identify with that. The Israelites were given everything they needed: food, water, a cloud by day, a pillar of fire by night, the protection of the God of the universe, and all they could do was complain. I know about this intimately because it's one of the struggles of my own life and heart. Because God is bringing me, a selfish, somewhat control freaky, complaining, doubtful, disobedient girl, to freedom. The parallels in my life to the women of Sarabari and their journey is so real and profound. My process is not so different from that of the Israelites. I've been given the job of my dreams, people who support me to do it. I've been given everything I need, but I often still want to jump ahead to the promised land and skip the hard stuff, and I do it with an ungrateful heart. So often, God hands me what I need to move through an area of brokenness in my life or through a tough situation, but I can't see beyond the problem. So I stay in the desert for 40 more years, and the transformation process takes a little longer because I'm so stubborn. I'm one of those stiff-necked people of Exodus. One of my favorite quotes comes from Australian Aboriginal leader Leela Watson. She says, "If you've come here to help me, you're wasting your time. But if you've come here because your liberation is bound up with mine, then let us work together. Our liberty is bound together. My liberty has been bound up with the women of Sarabari." I wouldn't be where I am today without their partnership and their friendship. Here's a hard truth. A generation of Israelites did not make it to the promised land because of their disobedience and stubbornness. But I want to tag on here that the promised land on earth is not the end. We have hope of life with God. We know and understand that many of the women we work with in both Sonogachi and Sarabari may never make it out of the process. Indeed, many will never make it out of the red light area like Rena. They will never make it out of sexual slavery. The women of Sarabari and other women working at freedom businesses may never reach the end point of transformation. But we hope that ultimate freedom comes, if not in this life, then the next. And we know that this walk of transformation is not just for these women, but also for their children, their husbands, and their lovers. Also for me and for you. A new life is possible for all of us. What I know is true is this: God brought his people out of slavery because he loves them. God brings us through the desert because he loves us and he wants us to be transformed. God goes with us in the process because he loves us, even though we frustrate him to the point of quitting. It says right here in Exodus 33:3, go up to the land flowing with milk and honey, but I will not go with you because you are a stiff-necked people. And if I go, I might destroy you. When the people heard these distressing words, they began to mourn and no one put on any ornaments. Skipping down a little bit, Moses bowed down to the ground at once and worshipped. O Lord, if I have found favor in your eyes, then let the Lord go with us. Although this is a stiff-necked people, forgive our wickedness and our sin and take us as your inheritance. Then the Lord said, I am making a covenant with you before all your people. I will do wonders never before done in any nation in all the world. The people you live among will see how awesome is the work that I, the Lord, will do for you. God, the God of the universes, was frustrated and ready to quit, still listening to the pleas of Moses, and God makes a covenant. God presses in. One of the most powerful, important parts of the freedom journey is that this is not a journey that we can do alone. We are on this freedom journey together, and transformation happens in communities. God brought the Israelites out of slavery together, not just a few that would line up and do what they were told. He brought them out together. 100,000, I believe is what I read. 100,000. They lived together. They disobeyed together. And most of them did enter the promised land together. Many were lost along the way, but ultimately they went together. They went as a community. They succeeded and they failed as a community. The greatest strength the women have as they come on their own freedom journey out of the sex trade is their friendship with one another, their community. The women of Sarabari have become production managers and trainers and truly the prophets who lead other women to freedom. They journey together with one another for one another, and freedom is being found. The promised land is in sight. Before I end today, I want to share a story with you about a woman who found freedom at Sarabari. Her name is Anya. Anya came from an impoverished area of West Bengal, and about a year and a half ago, she found herself being forced into a red light area after having been promised a job in the city. She spent months in the line selling her body before she heard about Sarabari. Once she did, she found the courage to come in and look for employment with us. She was determined to find freedom, and we saw the courage in her eyes on the very first day. But understandably, there were also deep concerns and fear also on her face. At that time, we didn't have space for a new trainee. But we made a decision to take on Anya because she expressed very clearly that she was ready for a new life. Anya started on a sewing machine, and to everyone's surprise, including her own, she was making export-quality bags early in her second month. This woman, who'd never taken a metro, which is like a subway, or an escalator, until she was with our staff, this shy young woman who wasn't sure of how to even get home from Calcutta to her own village, this hesitant woman who expressed fear about how fast sewing machines ran, she dominated training and picked up production capacity faster than almost anyone else who had gone through sewing machine training. The confidence she developed as she learned to sew quickly brought restoration in other areas of her life. She became more open during mental health groups, shared about her struggles, challenges, and hopes. She stood up to her partner when he put pressure on her about her salary. She went to visit her daughter in the village over the holidays and explained to them, her family, that she had a good job and she would be putting her daughters in a good school soon. She told the staff about a friend she made in the red light area who she was encouraging to find her own freedom and come visit Sarabari. It's been about 18 months since Anya first walked through our doors, and her countenance and her demeanor have completely changed. She smiles often, her eyes are bright with hope, and she shares her gentle strength with everyone around her. Stories of freedom like this are what keeps us pressing on, keeps us in the struggle for freedom, engaged in the battle, where we may win as many as we lose. We bear the wounds and the scars that come with walking this Exodus road together. The women of Sarabari are truly my heroes. Every day they rise. They rise above what would and could hold them hostage, and they press in. So until the day we all live free, we press on. Thank you.